When you realize that mainstream media has sold you a box of rocks, it's time to tune into The Kate Daly Show, America's newest addiction. The show starts now.
To pass SEAL training, there are a series of long swims that must be completed. One is the night swim. Before the swim, the instructors joyfully brief the students on all the species of sharks that inhabit the waters off San Clemente. They assure you, however, that no student has ever been eaten by a shark, at least not that they can remember. But you are also taught that if a shark begins to circle your position, stand your ground. Do not swim away. Do not act afraid. And if the shark, hungry for a midnight snack, darts towards you, then summons up all your strength and punch him in the snout, and he will turn and swim away. There are a lot of sharks in the world. If you hope to complete the swim, you will have to deal with them. So if you want to change the world, don't back down from the sharks.
Hi there. Great speech. Great speech. Oh, welcome. It's true, is it not? There's a lot of sharks out there that we deal with, and you got to learn how to swim with the sharks. You got to learn how to deal with it. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. Glad to have you listening. Go to katedalyradio.com. If you'd like to share those podcasts, share them far and wide. We're over 500,000 listens now, well over, and it's a lot of fun to be able to spread those to educate others. And so, by all means, grab a podcast and share it in your group or to the people in your life. It'd be fantastic, and I thank you for it. And let people know about the show. Post on social media about it. I would love that as well. In this hour, I, of course, welcome Melissa Smith joining me, who joins me every Wednesday. How are you, Melissa?
I'm good. How are you, Kate?
I'm great. We're going to talk about some really interesting things because of Melissa's background. This is going to be a really interesting hour, and I think you bring up some brilliant points. By the way, I was talking about Father's Day. I was talking about some gifts that you could get dear old dad or your husband or the fathers in your life. And we were talking about everything from straps that go around your tire to get you out of a hairy situation without anybody else's help, to tools, to all kinds of things. Actually, fire starters. It's like fire in a box. You stick it in the middle of some wood and pull the string and obviously you got a fire. So all kinds of things like that, even a sonar fishing tool. That is actually to show you where the fish are. That's actually on the Kate Daly Show page on Facebook, and you can check out all the links to certain gifts. Every year I usually go over like gifts and things that you could buy for the guys in your life, manly man kinds of gifts. And I was thinking, a Leatherman, or I had somebody tell me a Leatherman's a great, great one, and I agree. That's a great one. Also, pocket knives. I actually had pocket knives 1 year. I had them engraved for all the guys in the family so they could always carry those with them. And that they really loved that gift. And so I was just thinking about this because I was talking to my father about how his grandfather was born the week or the year after the Civil War, and how cool it would have been to have had a knife or something like that from that time era that I love things like that from history that say something about history and that come down through families. And I think that that's such a fantastic thing that you could have in your possession. And really and truly, when you think about all the things you have, what are the things that mean the most? Either the things that are sentimental or the things that are have been handed down and whatnot. And so we're going to talk just a little bit about that in this hour, and history and artifacts. And so I welcome you, Melissa. This is going to be a great conversation. I'm excited.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this is a subject that I really, really, really love too.
Mm-hmm.
And when my children were much smaller,
mm-hmm.
And they were more willing to do whatever vacation we kind of suggested.
Right. the one you planned.
Right.
Yeah.
My husband has a great, great, great grandfather that served at Vicksburg during mm-hmm. the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a vacation to Vicksburg, Mississippi, and on a spring break trip. We hiked the battlefield. We found the marker on the battlefield that was the location where his regiment had served.
Wow.
And took our picture there, which is fun.
That's neat.
And
yeah.
then the people in Vicksburg dig up lead all the time, lead bullets out of the ground whenever oh. anything. The battlefield is so huge, and there was so much ordnance there. So they have mason jars full of it everywhere, and they're for sale. So we bought each of the boys and the family one of those as a remembrance of Vicksburg and a connection to the family.
Wow. I like that. I like that idea.
So that's what I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We know, all of us know, that there's a national crisis of history, education, and understanding in the nation right now.
I agree.
Our students are mind numb by the kind of propagandized history that's being taught. They're just not interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell you lots of stories having been in a classroom for a while. But we are losing our history. And why do we even care? Does it matter that a student today understands and knows anything about the Civil War or about the Revolution? Does it matter that they go and walk through Mount Vernon? Does it matter?
I think it does. It does matter because you have a healthy respect when you're visiting those properties, when you're looking at those artifacts, when you're understanding and even looking at at what they wore. I think there's something very special, kind of a reverence for those that sacrificed, right? I mean, how else do you get that?
Well, it's a very interesting phenomenon, and I have a background in museum work.
Yes, you do. You have a master's in museum studies. People don't know that about you.
I do. I have a master's in archival and museum studies.
That's
and
awesome.
So there's an amazing thing that happens mm-hmm. whenever an actual artifact from a historic event is present.
Okay.
Everyone wants to touch it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And I've watched this over and over, and it doesn't matter, even if it's fairly recent. My dad has a rifle he brought back from Japan. It was a Japanese rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids want to touch it. They want to hold it. They want to look at it. We want to have that in our hand. And the reason why I believe that we do that is because we want to connect. That artifact connects us to that moment.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And it's a powerful psychological thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you want to kind of expand your definition of what an artifact is, Mount Vernon is an artifact of George Washington. And I've been to Mount Vernon, and we took our kids to Mount Vernon. When we go there, suddenly George Washington is not just a guy you read about in a book.
Mm-hmm.
He had a home.
Right, right.
And he had stuff there. You can see the bed he was in when he died. You can see the view that he looked out on. It connects us in very material ways. What's happening, and it makes me tremendously sad,
mm-hmm.
is that our national landmarks, including Civil War battlefields, including, even places that have connection to America's ethnic history, Cannery Row in Monterey, California, the Mesa petroglyphs in Albuquerque, New Mexico, their visitation numbers are way down over, as much as 70% over the last 30 years.
Right.
So what is that doing? We're not connecting anymore.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
We all sit around and we scratch our heads and we go, why are our kids all turning into socialists? Because we have not connected them to the past at all. We've let that happen.
Yeah.
Colonial Williamsburg, one of the most fantastic places you could ever visit, they are in some pretty serious debt. They're losing $317 million in debt.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2016, they were losing $148,000 to run the site per day.
Hmm.
Because they're getting only half the number of people visiting there that they got 30 years ago.
Wow.
Where do we take our kids, our school kids, on visits now when they go out on field trips?
Mm-hmm.
Do we take them Do schools still take kids to historic sites? Not so much anymore.
Yeah, not really. Not really. They're going to Earth Day, Earth Day celebrations. But I don't see, which is ridiculous, I don't see historic sites, though, that mean something to our country, that are steeped in history like that. And you're right about that connection, too.
Well, it's very easy to rewrite a history that no one knows.
Mm-hmm.
And going to those places physically really does connect all of us to both the good and the bad of American history. I had an interesting conversation with my son when they were younger. We visited a lot of Civil War battlefields because they were interested in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an interest in the Civil War as well, so it was an easy connection. But I asked him, I said, Do you have an understanding of Confederate soldiers and Union soldiers and the suffering on both sides? And he said, yes, because we've stood, like, symbolically in the shoes of both sides.
Right.
We know that for the ordinary guy out there on the line, there was suffering and glory and valor and sacrifice and hardship on both sides.
Yeah, it's true.
And we know a lot more about the racial component of the Civil War because we went to a site where there were some of the United States colored troops, that's what they were called in 1860, the USCT troops, that were captured by some Confederates and were executed. They were not taken as prisoners of war.
Wow.
So you learn unexpected things.
It's true.
By being in the place where it happened.
I agree.
And it's an amazing experience, and I would recommend it to everyone if, you know, but we want those connections. Artifacts tell a different kind of story than a textbook does.
I agree. And they really are like the priceless gems in a family, because you can have a lot of stuff, and we all do. We all have loads of stuff. We even have storage units for our stuff. But think about the most priceless things in your home are usually handed down through the ages, usually something steeped in history, usually something given from dad down to son, down to dad, down to son kind of thing. I mean, when you really look at it, what's the most priceless things that you own, the most prized possessions are usually going to be those are of a historical nature. Be right back. More with Melissa. She wants to play something from a D-Day clip for you. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
Have you heard about Point of...
Yeah. Music is very powerful in that way.
Oh, yeah. The White Cliffs of Dover by Glenn Miller. Talking a little bit about history with the anniversary of D-Day tomorrow, it's very poignant to be able to talk about this. And also, Melissa brings a kind of a special emphasis with all of this with her studies and museum studies and her take on what we really need to be doing as far as instilling that sense of history and that drive to want to know history, being a part of it, and also touching it, feeling it, and having it resonate with our youth. It's something that they're not getting now, and that troubles me.
Well, it troubles me a lot too, because I think our history does matter, and when we begin to forget it, we develop cultural amnesia.
Yeah,
but I think what's happening in our schools is not the cure. The cure is going to come from someplace else. And I was really moved by the story that I found just today. And a friend, I have a son who's a trumpet player. And so he's marching in a drum corps this summer. And so a bunch of the drum corps moms, one of the drum corps moms shared this story about a very special trumpet. And you will hear much of what we've been talking about in the story, about how an artifact can connect us in a way that nothing else can. And by the way, it also has to do with music and how music connects us to another time, too.
Right. Okay, here we go. Let me go ahead and play this. This is interesting. You're going to love this. Here we go.
had been through a lot, obviously. It was a complete disassembly and reassembly.
David Anderson has breathed life into lots of old, tattered, beaten instruments over the years, but this one was different.
There's cracks in some of the pipes, and there's, things missing, and of course it was not straight. There's a lot of dents. A lot of work had to be done. It had to be just completely torn down, straightened, and replated.
This trumpet belonged to a young Army Sergeant Richard Wank, who, while never letting the trumpet leave his grip, leapt off a Higgins boat yards from Normandy Beach, June 6, 1944.
He was standing at the front of the boat, and when the ramp dropped, he jumped off and heard an explosion, turned around, and everybody was dead. He makes it to the beach, gets shot along the way, and laid on the beach for a while with that trumpet underneath him.
2 days later, still alive and clutching the trumpet, Sergeant Wank was found by medics.
What they experienced was on a whole nother level. It really was.
Sergeant Wank's family never really knew about that day in 1944, not until right before his death in 2007.
But he would never say anything about it. He would never talk about it. The only thing he would ever say is, it should have been me.
His grandson, Jeff, felt there was a legacy to share, both the story and the trumpet.
What I was saying was, you have to tell someone. You can't just keep this to yourself. This isn't just your history anymore.
It wasn't easy. Just handing it over to Anderson to be restored was difficult.
He really didn't want to let it go. He told me as soon as I left, he sent a text. He's like, I cannot believe I just let you leave with that instrument.
It took 7 weeks to restore, an experience Anderson will never forget.
Even though it's been restored, you can still see where he held his hands. Just like you would see on a firearm or anything that's used a lot and held by someone a lot. I was blown away. I was just working on it. As it was a real honor and mind-blowing experience.
One day while working on the horn, Anderson had an idea. He knew the UT alumni band would be performing in Normandy for the 75th anniversary of D-Day. The connection was made. And the newly restored trumpet went to one of the best of the brass, Kenny Bierschenk. He's chosen to perform Taps.
As a musician, we often think of music as spanning the centuries and Taps being sounded at all these military events. It's the same now as it was back in World War II. It's the same as it was back in the Civil War. And to be able to play Taps on a trumpet that was actually used to do that very same thing 75 years ago when it was still a battle zone, that's really meaningful to me.
Wow. If that doesn't put a knot in your throat, Melissa, what a great clip that came from a Fox 4 channel. And that's, wow. Wow.
Well, it puts a knot in my throat, too, because mm-hmm. as I told you, I have a trumpet player. I have a dad who is a World War II veteran. He was just here for a high school graduation over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of connections are meaningful.
Right.
When we and one of the things that really moves me the most about that story is the man that was restoring the trumpet said, you can see where he held it. It's been dented and dinged. It's because the trumpet itself has a story to tell.
Mm.
And that story, that's why it's not just any random trumpet. A trumpet that was at Normandy is going back to Normandy to do the same thing in a different circumstance. That's what moves us.
Yeah. When they said
the guy who's
going
to play that, he must have tremendous control to be able to play that without weeping.
I can't even imagine, because when they said he was chosen, and I thought, man, to be chosen to be able to play that was a huge honor, considering where it came from. And you could tell he just kind of was tearing up. It meant so much to him, and it should. These things should mean that much to us.
Wow. Well, there's another aspect to that story that the museum person in me wants to make sure is heard.
Mm-hmm.
We all have things, and they have stories. And if we don't tell anyone the story of those things, whether they're from our life mm-hmm. or from our parents' lives. Things don't have to be enormously old. They don't have to be 150 years old to have meaning. Right. They can be something from your own life. Mm-hmm. But if you never tell anyone the story, it will be lost.
You're exactly right, because what was he saying to his dad? He was saying, you need to tell people. This is amazing. This is something that people would be interested in. And then even watching that leave his premises was hard for him, because it meant so much to him. But the fact that it meant so much to him and that he hadn't really told anyone about it is astounding. I mean, what if he would have died with that story with him?
And no one would have known. It would have been an old, beat-up, nasty trumpet in somebody's pawn shop.
Yeah, you're right.
We would have never known that story. So I can tell you that one of the big headlines out recently, too, has been that, you know, our aging parents are downsizing their homes and their houses are full of stuff, but their kids don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And before you say you don't want that stuff, you might want to pause and ask, what's the story?
Right. You're right.
Is there a story? Is it something worth keeping, or a token portion of it worth keeping because of something bigger that it represents? I have some plates that when I got married, there were some, I don't know if you know the pattern blue willow plates. Mm-hmm. They were very popular mm-hmm. in the 19th century. And there were a couple of those that belonged to my great-grandmother. And so I took those, and I didn't spend a big fortune purchasing brand new china when mm-hmm. I got married.
Mm-hmm.
I asked people to give me new blue willow plates to supplement the old ones that I had.
Wow.
So every time I get those plates out, I'm connecting to my bigger family.
I love that.
And it makes me happy. And hopefully when I hand those on to someone else,
mm-hmm.
they will be connected to another generation. It's a powerful thing. I told you, my dad is 95. He's a World War II veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And he just over the last couple of months told me, he said, I want you to come over to my house. And he says, I'm done working on family history. I'm going to give it all to you now.
Mm-hmm.
He loaded all those. I have four huge bins of family history. I'm still sorting through it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I found that was really wonderful to me, my grandparents were just barely married when my grandfather went to World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all of the letters, or all the letters that are still around,
mm-hmm.
That my grandmother, a brand new bride,
wow.
wrote to her husband in France.
Wow. What a treasure.
From 1919. And they're just, I knew my grandmother mm-hmm. as a very old woman.
Mm-hmm.
These letters are completely different.
I bet.
It's a picture of my grandmother as a young mm-hmm. woman, and it's very interesting. In that file of things, there's the map of France. My grandfather was a truck driver,
mm-hmm.
and the map that he carried with him, and he marked on it the roads that he was driving, is also in that file.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's a very wow. personal connection. It's not the same as looking at a map of France in a book.
So true.
This is a map that my grandfather used to navigate France. And my kids were all over that.
I bet.
My kids were like, I want to see that. Let me see that. Can we look at that? And we were finding all kinds of places, you know, oh, look, here's Verdun. Here's some of the names that they've learned in their history class on the map.
Hmm.
Including, and this was another thing that I just thought was precious and wonderful. My grandmother apparently had found a four-leaf clover,
mm-hmm.
and she sent it to him. She pinned it with a straight pin onto the letter, which is kind
okay.
of a funny thing.
Yeah.
But it was in the envelope, and I'm opening up this letter, and there is the four-leaf clover.
Hmm.
100-year-old four-leaf clover.
Oh, my gosh.
Still there.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. That is truly amazing. I think because it just, you know, and it's something so small, but it's our past. It's who we are. We're made up of all of these people and these things. I mean, I'll never forget doing the show, talking about the genes that you get are from, the relatives. You're going to get that DNA. You're going to get something very special cumulatively from those that were there before you in your family, and how interesting that was to me. And then you have these pieces of history. And like you said, when you're touching that four-leaf clover or reading those letters, you're right there. That does make all the difference in the world. It really does.
And what a legacy to share. And, you know, whether your family has those kinds of things still hanging around, I guess I come from a family of hoarders, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
we
keep everything. But somewhere in my house, I have the letters that I wrote home when I was at college,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
that my mom gave back. Those letters will be valuable to my kids someday. One of the saddest things I ever think I heard, I had a college professor who had kept a journal all through his college years, and when he got to be an adult, he went back and looked at it and said, "These are so juvenile. I was such a goof." And he threw them away. I know, and he was a history guy, too, and he said, "I regret bitterly."
Yes.
Well, actually, what he did was he censored them. He took out the things that he thought were not inspiring and good, and then he threw the rest away. And he said, "My kids read that now, and they say, 'Man, you were such a goody too.'" He said,
I
really
took out all
wasn't,
the good parts. We'll be right back.
I didn't want them to know that.
We'll be right back with Melissa. I took out all the good parts. Be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Kate Smith's rendition of that. Don't you, Melissa?
I do.
Yeah. And you know what? Because of the controversy, anytime I can play it, I do. I love I love it. I think radio stations all over the country should be playing that. And hopefully near 4th of July, they will be too. Let's hope. Kate Smith's version of God Bless America, absolutely the best. And I welcome back Melissa. We were talking a little bit about history. She's got such a background in this and such an education in history and artifacts and an understanding of them. She's probably the most perfect person to have on the show to talk about this. Guest slash co-host. And so I love that idea because we see a lot of documentaries, but this is so different to talk about the history. And you actually instilled this in your kids at a young age, and I commend you for that, because I think this goes to show that kids really want to know and want to understand.
They do. And I can't even remember now what the first Civil War battlefield we went to was. We went mostly because my husband and I wanted to go. But the kids, over time, it was so funny. They were very small, mm-hmm. and gift shopping is a must, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they picked up kepis, which are hats, the Civil War hats. And pretty soon, one was wearing Confederate gray, and the other was wearing Union blue. And if I recall, Santa Claus one year brought some actual reenactment pants that were in their size.
Oh, wow.
And they put together their own little uniforms. They were the cutest thinking things ever. And my boys wore those uniforms to whenever we were at a Civil War battlefield. I've got mm-hmm. pictures of them at Gettysburg and Shiloh and Antietam wearing their uniforms.
I think it's great.
It was kind of funny. My older son, eventually in Cub Scouts, he organized the Cub Scouts we were having a camp out and the kids were just kicking around with nothing to do. And, mm-hmm. "Hey, everybody, let's get together and march like we're soldiers." And he would organize battle reenactments.
I think that's awesome.
And all the other kids thought it was fabulous.
Yeah.
They had a big time, because it's called resurrection battle, right?
Right.
Because we're all dead, we all fall down dead, and then we all get up and do it again. And I think about where he is right now, he's marching with a drum corps, which is all about flashy uniforms and marching. I should have been able to predict it a long time ago. And brass instruments. Awesome. It's all part of one big continuum. It's kind of morphed into a different interest.
Right.
But yeah, he does know. My kids, we used to play games in the car. You know, how many, who can name the most Confederate generals? And at one time, my kids could do about 10 on either side.
You are kidding me. I think that's awesome. I do. I think it's great.
And they could tell you where they served and what they did. And yeah, it was fun. If I recall, when we visited Gettysburg, we hired a battlefield guide. And the kids had their uniforms on, and we were at the top of Little Round Top, and we had our very own personal reenactment. The guy said, he sent my younger son down the hill, said, okay, you're going to come up this direction, which is where they came up. And he told my other son, you've got to hold the hill. And they got that experience at Gettysburg on the field.
Wow.
Where it happened.
Wow.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
And I did want to mention, there are some amazing... I think we neglect the power of books, not history books, but books to tell us a story too. My kids, we read together all of the Little House on the Prairie books, which I was astonished when I read the books at how much really good information about pioneer life was there.
Yeah, for sure. I think
there's
so too.
Another book that is my all-time favorite children's book called Pink and Say by Patricia Polacco, who's written a lot of children's books. But Pink and Say is about two boys who meet on a Civil War battlefield. One was a Union soldier, and the other was his mother was a slave, and he was out, and he helps. I can never keep their name straight. He helps the boy that was in the Union soldier boy had gotten wounded, and they were both like 14 years old or something. When I say they were boys, they really were boys. They were not, he wasn't an adult soldier. Anyway, they're captured by some Southern marauders and sent to Andersonville. And it's a very hard book to read for little kids.
Yeah.
The most powerful part of the book for me, and I shared this book with my son's first grade class, and there's a place in the book where the Union soldier had, the boy had shaken Abraham Lincoln's hand, and the family of the slave family that has helped him, they want to shake his hand because he shook the hand of Abraham Lincoln.
Oh my gosh, wow.
And when I read this when I went into my son's first grade class and first grade class and we read that, I have shaken the hand of someone who shook the hand of someone who shook the hand of Abraham Lincoln.
Interesting.
And I share, that's at the end of that book, and I shook the hand of every first grader in the classroom, and I said, now you're connected. You've shaken the hand of someone who shook the hand of someone who shook the hand of someone who shook the hand of Abraham Lincoln.
I think that's really neat. I do. There's something really cool about that.
Well, there's a chain. We sometimes view history as this thing that's far away from us. But it's like the 7 degrees of separation, right?
Right.
We're never very far away from the past. And I think sometimes we don't realize that. And whatever your thing is, I was helping someone here. We have a friend, and he has never done not one lick of family history. He's black. And I said, do you have any slaves in your family tree? I don't know. And literally, we sat down in an afternoon in about 2 hours. I had the name of the person of his slave ancestor on a census.
Jeez.
And he was like, oh my gosh, I never knew that. It was so exciting to him. And we printed all this stuff out, and I said, you take that home and share that with your family.
Yeah.
Because I think we have a lot of people in the country who feel that they're floating around on a current, but they're not really connected to American history. And all of us are connected to American history.
Yeah, it's true.
Whether your family came over on the Mayflower, whether they came through Ellis Island, wherever they came from, whatever their story is, every single family's story is American history.
I like that. I really do. Because there's a difference, you say, between, you know, we have documentaries and then there's material culture.
Right. Material culture is all that stuff that hangs around that maybe doesn't belong in a museum, but it's important in your family. Material culture is all the stuff that we create. It's our clothes, our shoes, our letters, our furniture, our houses, all of that, the material of history. And the thing that I love the most about material culture is that it transcends time and space. Things, I have a framed picture in my house of George Washington and Martha Washington and her children.
Right.
It's been in my family. I don't know who it came from originally, but at one time in American history, every home had a portrait of George Washington in it. I have the portrait of George Washington that was in my family's home.
Wow.
And it's hanging in my home now.
See, I think that is, I think that's really neat. And I neat really probably isn't the best word. Words fail me today, but I really do think that we need to preserve these things. I remember talking to Don Fotheringham, who, by the way, World War II vet, and he wrote the book, The President Makers, one of my favorite books. And when I was asking him about this, you know, I said, how did you write this? He actually had to go into the archives of people's attics to find books that aren't really books that belong in museums, but they're books that are out of print. They're books that you cannot get that kind of history anymore that is outlined in the books that he was able to find attic hunting. And so he said, you know, it's too bad that people throw that kind of stuff away, because he said the libraries don't stock certain books. We can't get a hold of certain things to document some of the things we know to be true. And he said, that's unfortunate that we have to actually go into people's, you know, attics, because that's where they are. They're just not out there anymore in the libraries, but also that people just chuck them and throw them away, and how we really, really need to understand that we don't print things anymore. We don't, there's books that they actually stopped printing because they didn't want those messages to be known. And those are the kinds of things that I think each of us have a responsibility to preserve. Even for our family or culture.
One of the most tragic stories I have ever heard relative to this whole subject, when the Nazis went into Paris and some of the Jewish families had either fled or they were detained or rounded up and taken elsewhere, whatever. But a handful of people were kept to work in like a depot. They were cleaning out the homes that had been abandoned of all their stuff, and they brought it into this depot, and they were sorting furniture and paintings and everything that came out of these people's homes. And one, like I said, they had detained Jews that were working in those places. And this one man said that he saw a suitcase full of photographs come in, and he opened it up, and they were the photographs from his own family.
Oh, my.
And wow. He tried, while he was there working, he hid that suitcase. Eventually, he was taken elsewhere, and I don't know where. They put him on a train to a camp somewhere. But he lost all those. But think about if all what was lost in the Holocaust.
Right.
Those people lost everything that they were. And I'm not, you know, I'm not suggesting that we keep everything of everything. But there's so much of our identity that's embedded in our photographs, in pictures of our family, pictures of our mothers, pictures of our fathers, pictures of our children. Let's do something to save that, because in 100 years from now, those things are going to be worth greatly in our families. Our great-grandchildren and our great-great-grandchildren will look at us as I look at my grandparents' letters.
Yeah, very true.
So save the stuff that's really good and meaningful to you. don't let your history be a mystery to the people that come behind you, because I think we have things to say, and our lives are important.
And it's getting more important as things get skewed by those who want to write history. That
yeah.
If we don't tell those stories, if we don't have those journals, if we don't, honestly, I mean, think about how much we have to keep up with just doing the show on the news cycles and the propaganda overload and all of the things we're subject to as citizens. If people don't understand what this is like to go through this right now and try and find solid information and how hard that is. And I mean, look at the struggle we're in right now. Don't you want people to understand that, you know? 30 years from now.
Absolutely.
How did we, because they're going to be asking, how did we get here? And we're going to have to explain somehow. But I think that's really relevant to what we're talking about is our journals and things like that that need to be known, that need to be able to resurface and the story behind them. For sure.
And there's just so much. Whether, and like I said, I have a degree in museum and archival studies. There's archival materials we should be keeping. That's the paper stuff that we keep.
Right.
And photographs. And then there's that other thing that really helps to humanize us.
Mm-hmm.
What's something that's really, it's really symbolic of your life.
Yeah.
That you could pass on. We just had a discussion with a family member. My mother-in-law has quilts in her home that were made by family members, but she's the only one that knows who made them.
Oh, no. Wow.
If she doesn't pass them on to the next generation, they will be lost.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
very true.
You know, help the next generation. And I, the message has come through to me several times. I need to get rid of the junk that's in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to make space for the really important stuff.
I agree. Melissa Smith, thank you. And thank you. This was a great hour, a good reminder. Really appreciate this. Thanks. And kind of a just really understanding our history and how to pass it down. Thank you. Wasn't that great? Be right back with Susan. Don't go anywhere. This is the Kate Daly Show, katedalyradio.com for podcasts of this episode. Be right back.